market clothing prices to who's in town and who's in the news. And, of course, the very best travel and weather service to get you home and dry.
Don't be left behind. Join us from October the 5th.
London News, 97.3 FM. All news, all the time.
Now, in Britain today, we'll be asking the European Union for millions of pounds to help remove the scars of sectarian hatred from Belfast and Londonderry. The Foreign Secretary, Douglas Hurd, is in Luxembourg for talks with his EU partners, which will include a discussion on the peace process in Ireland. Britain will be pressing European Commission President Jacques Delors to agree to finance a series of inner-city projects for Ulster's two main cities, and our European correspondent John Fraser will tell us more. What sort of programmes, John, are the British government putting to Brussels?
Well, what they're looking for is for some symbolic and also some noticeable aid from the European Union to heal the scars of decades of hatred. For instance, in parts of Belfast and Londonderry, there are no-go areas. There are areas which have really crumbled under the decades of hatred. There are walls between the two communities. What Brussels is being asked to do is to give money to help heal those scars, to help bring down the barriers between the communities, to help grass over areas which have become derelict over the decades. In other words, to help restore the inner cities and to help, in a way, symbolise the peace process in a physical way.
Am I not right in saying that North and South in Ireland already receive huge amounts of money from the European Union?
You're right, yes. Ireland is... the Irish Republic is in the priority stream for European aid. It's one of just four countries, along with Spain, Portugal and Greece, which receives total priority in terms of aid. However, Northern Ireland also does very well out of the European Union, something like £1 billion over the next 4 or 5 years. So it's you're quite right to say that both parts of Ireland are already getting a lot of money. But Brussels officials have already said that what they want to do is to do something not just symbolic, but in terms of real cash to help the peace process. And that's why Douglas Hurd will be insisting that what happens is not just a diversion of money from one project to another.
Sounds rather generous of them to me, John.
Well, the European Union is rather generous, but don't forget it's our taxpayers' money. If you do the sums, Britain actually does badly out of Europe, despite the rebate that Lady Thatcher negotiated in the 1980s. So if we do have a part of Britain which is very deserving, and I don't think many people would argue that Northern Ireland has real problems in terms of inner-city decay, in terms of decline, in terms of unemployment. This is a deserving case, and Mr. Hurd will be making that.
But they're talking about an injection of cash more than something that is just symbolic, are they?
I don't think we're talking about hundreds of millions of pounds of new money, because the projects, for instance, tearing down a wall isn't going to cost a vast amount of money. Certainly repairing some of the scars of inner-city decay over decades will take money. But I'm sure we're talking about tens of millions of pounds of new money from Brussels. And I think Mr. Hurd will also be making the point that just as soon as that money can be made available, it is needed and it should be handed over.
Jacques Delors, still the president of the Commission, of course. Is he likely to endorse this request?
Yes, he is. He and his fellow commissioners have already given some money, some new money to Northern Ireland and indeed to the Republic, to what's known as the International Fund for Ireland. The contribution from Brussels has gone up to something like £16 million a year. And Mr. Delors has already said he would like to give a second stage of aid. And that's what Douglas Hurd is focusing on. He wants to make sure this second stage of European aid is significant and substantial and can be seen to be helping the people of Northern Ireland.
Another meeting in Luxembourg today, the Environment Minister John Gummer having a go at the Eurocrats. I understand he's annoyed at delays in introducing a new labelling system for environmentally favourable products.
That's right. It's been about 2.5 years since European ministers asked Brussels officials to come up with what's known in the jargon as the eco-labelling scheme. These are pretty little floral symbols which can go on goods which are deemed to be worthy in the sense that they don't do too much harm to the environment.
Will they be useful, do you suppose, when this whole thing is sorted out?
Well, they've done it for two products. They've done it for dishwashers and for washing machines. But yes, I think... basically, a consumer would like to know that a good on offer in a shop is going to be good for the environment. We're becoming a lot more conscious of these things.
And when can we expect that to happen, do you suppose?
Well, it should have happened already, and certainly a lot of the work has been done, but there's some hold-up in the Brussels bureaucracy, and John Gummer will be telling the Brussels bureaucrats to get their act together, because British consumers want this, the British government want it, and we don't have our own national scheme, because we're waiting for Brussels to get on with it.
Okay, John, we have to finish there. Okay, thank you very much indeed. John Fraser in Brussels, our European correspondent, 6:29. And here's Fred again.
No real dramas on the road at the moment. I mentioned earlier on a van had a minor accident on the A2 Kent bound, just the other side of the M25. That's not causing any problems. Motorways at the moment, they're beginning to build up, especially on the southern sector, junction 7 to 8, the M23 to Reigate. East India Dock Road, roadworks there. No problems yet, but it will build up. On the underground, the earlier problems on the Victoria line seem to be resolved. There are some delays, but it's all moving. LBC Travel News.
Golfing fanatics? Play golf in Latuke or Glen Eagles. Entertain your clients or friends by chartering your own private aircraft with SFC Air Taxis. 081-504-3000. It could cost less than you think.
LBC News Talk 97.3. News.
The headlines at 6:30. Tony Blair is set to deliver his vision for the Labour Party in his first conference speech as leader. It's reported the address has been closely rehearsed to maximise the party's all-out attack on the Tories. The Finnish shipping line Silja is to weld the bow doors together on its ferries crossing the Baltic. The move comes after underwater cameras showed the crucial door on the Estonia had been ripped off before it sank. Cars have been vandalised and windows smashed in Germany during ceremonies to mark the fourth anniversary of unification. Chancellor Helmut Kohl has called for understanding and patience. And sanctions against Serbia and Montenegro could be eased after Yugoslavia closed its borders with the Bosnian Serbs. The Security Council says confirmation came in a joint report from Lord Owen and Thorvald Stoltenberg. There are the headlines. The next news is at 7 o'clock.
London's weather, a chilly start with some frost in the suburbs, a dry and sunny day today, remaining cold though, a high of 11 degrees Celsius, 52 Fahrenheit. It's 6:31. And overnight business news with the prospects for the day ahead. Here's Robin Amlow. Good morning.
Good morning, all. Last night in New York, the Dow Jones Index finished up 3 points at 38.46 compared to London's rather miserable performance. In the markets in the Far East at the moment, Tokyo's down, the Nikkei Index down 103 points, 19,547, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong up 20 at 95.12. On the foreign exchanges, sterling's trading up a fraction at just under $1.58, but down two-thirds of a penny at just over 2 marks 45. In business news this morning, accountants Touche Ross say they are showing the lowest number of reported receiverships and administrations since 1989. In the 9 months to September 1994, Ralph Priest, partner in charge of Touche Ross's corporate recovery unit, which is perhaps something of a misnomer, says appointments plunged by a massive 37% on the same period last year. London and the South East stands out as the region that typifies the positive trend. Staying in London, in fact, in the Church House Conference Centre later this morning, Industry and Energy Minister Tim Egger will be addressing the first national Learning from Japan seminar. This is a DTI-funded initiative supported by Anderson Consulting, aimed at helping UK car component suppliers become world-class by learning best practice from car companies such as Nissan, Honda and Toyota. And staying on the subject of cars, Ford Motor Company chairman Alex Trotman, speaking in Paris, says the company plans to build a new mini car for urban use in Europe sometime in the next 3 years. The car, based on Ford's Car, that's K-A, Car, concept car, will be positioned below the Ford Fiesta. The Fiesta is currently Ford's smallest car available in Europe. In the papers this morning, in the Daily Telegraph, Thorn EMI has raised its stake in Toemi, its joint venture with Toshiba, to 55%. The deal's being financed from Toemi's cash reserves and so won't actually use up any of Thorn's own cash resources, although it will indirectly cost the group over £24 million. In The Times, British Gas and Offgas, the industry regulator, are said to be confident that the bill to introduce competition into the domestic gas market will be included in the next parliamentary session. There had been fears that the bill for privatisation of the post office would take up too much time and that the gas industry would have to wait at least another year. In The Guardian, the World Bank has warned of a dangerous rise in the proportion of old people in the global population over the next 30 years. The World Bank warns that poor countries would have to consider means testing the elderly for pensions, while richer nations, and I suppose we should include ourselves in that, would have to progressively raise the retirement age if they want to continue to provide a universal pension. In The Independent, British Aerospace's takeover of VSEL may be threatened by a £40 million contingent liability relating to VSEL's privatisation in 1986. This liability is the maximum amount payable to British shipbuilders. That's actually the company from which VSEL emerged. It depends on the company's performance for the 6 years to the end of March 1992. It's all a bit curious, this. British Shipbuilders is a state-owned but dormant operation, said to be keen to extract the payment, which would go to the Treasury. The Treasury, presumably, is responsible for the keenness. This morning, we are expecting the High Court judgment in the Goodah Walker case. Some £630 million went west amongst Lloyd's huge losses over the last few years, and the people who lost this particular money will be finding out if they were indeed misled about the size of the risks they were undertaking. The judge will be ruling on whether more than 3,000 names were victims of massive negligence by Goodah Walker. The case actually ended in July, the report expected, as I say, today. On the economic front, official figures showing the government's gold and dollar reserves released this morning across the Atlantic, new car sales figures due out in the afternoon. Company results are slowing to a trickle, though, after the hectic reporting season. In the diary for today, just annual figures from Builders Rain, with half-year profits from Silent Night, Ibstock and Lamont Holdings. Richard.
Thank you. It's Robin Amler with the financial news, and of course I ought to tell you that talking of finance, you can be much richer this morning, £860 richer by taking part in our news makers competition. A mystery voice coming up for you between 7 and 8 o'clock. The prize this morning, £860. It's now 25 to 7.
You know, the closest I get to the environment is to buy biodegradable washing up liquid.
You fancy roughing it in the jungles of Sabah and Sarawak?
You what?
Sabah and Sarawak in Malaysia. Or orangutans in their natural habitat. And if you fancy, you can climb the ice mountain in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, right.
But where's the spirit of adventure, man? Jungle trekking, jungle native, some of the oldest rainforests. Or if you want to go green, man.
Where on earth can you get away from it all? Malaysia. Fascinating destinations. Call 071-930-7932 now.
What about the washing up?
FM. This is the LBC Morning Report. 24 minutes before 7. Very good morning to you. It's Richard Vaughan here. Now then, holidaymakers should soon be able to buy a timeshare without getting ripped off, because a new directive from the European Parliament has outlawed high-pressure selling and dodgy contracts. It follows a long campaign by the British Euro MPs, such as the Conservative Edward McMillan Scott, who's on the line now. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
What sort of scams are these timeshare touts pulling?
Well, the usual problem is that somebody goes on a holiday to the Canaries, let's say, and they're hooked in by a timeshare tout off the street who says, come and look at this holiday complex, and you get a free, I don't know, bottle of champagne or something. And then they're subjected to very high-pressure selling techniques, which means that they can be effectively brainwashed. I mean, I've had people who've been in 7 or 8 hours and have simply paid up a deposit of £600 or £700 to get away from the place.
Why didn't they just walk?
It's very difficult to do that in some of these places. I mean, the techniques used are extremely refined, and the salespeople are on extremely high commission rates. Mm. And so the ordinary punter finds it quite difficult, actually, to get away.
Well, for 8 hours?
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, a resort that's some distance away from the place where they're staying, there are no taxis. I can assure you that this is not at all unusual.
What do they have? Scantily clad women? Movies? Lots of booze? What is it goes on there? I mean, it must be something special to keep somebody there 8 hours, surely.
Well, the techniques are actually devised by American marketing companies, and they really rely on the insistence that we're giving you a good deal. You're going to get it today. We're going to give you a discount, but you must put your deposit down today to secure this once-for-all offer.
Mm-hmm.
And the once-and-for-all offer is actually available every day of the year and is relatively expensive because you're paying a very high commission rate, as I've said. And the average week of a timeshare, let's say, is about £5,000. And you, in addition to that, you have to pay possibly £200 per week of maintenance charges, and you've got to find your airfare and your food when you're there. So you can see that the great deal of the century isn't much of a deal. But what we've done is to make sure that through this directive, which comes into force in about 2.5 years, first of all, we've banned the taking of deposits. So you're not under pressure anymore.
Yep.
Secondly, you get a cooling-off period of 10 days anywhere in the EC. In other words, you can go back to your hotel, change your mind, and tell the company within 10 days. Thirdly, the contracts are written in your own language, and they specify exactly what you're getting. And so I think this will clean up the industry, which, you know, the concept is a fair one.
Mm. Hello. Yes, good morning. Have we lost Mr. McMillan Scott? Hello, Mr. McMillan Scott, are you there? Hello? We appear to... Hello, Mr. McMillan Scott, are you with us again? Yes, I'm sorry, we lost you for a moment there. You were telling us about the contracts being written in your own language. I suppose if you go to the Canaries, they're likely to be in Spanish, for example.
Yes, but all the EU languages, including English, will be available now. And so, I mean, this is an extremely important aspect of it.
Mr. McMillan Scott, I'm afraid we've got a bad line for some curious reason. What we'll do, we'll leave it just now if we may do, and if we get a chance, we'll come back to you in a couple of minutes. Thank you very much indeed for your time. We'll try to get back to you. 20 to 7.
There have been a lot of changes over the last 25 years at Jeeves of Belgravia, and good service is still our first priority. You'll find the finest dry cleaning, with attention to detail that's second to none, and Jeeves staff are specialists in every step of the process. You'll also find quality shoe and garment repair, including reweave, and a fast shirt laundry, all at a price that might surprise you. Jeeves of Belgravia. There are branches throughout London. Look us up in Yellow Pages.
Now then, listening to that chatter with Edward McMillan Scott is Norman Burden, chairman of the Timeshare Council. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And let's hope the line stays perfectly clear.
Well, I think we have reasonably good connections to Beaconsfield most mornings.
All the way up there in Buckinghamshire.
Absolutely.
Now, what do you think about this this new law? Tell me.
Well, we think on the whole that it's a great disappointment. I think it's a disappointment not simply to the industry, but a disappointment to the consumer. What Mr. McMillan Scott is saying is to some extent true, but it's not the fact that it's simply been MEPs who've been campaigning. We, the industry, have been campaigning for just as long to have even legislation across Europe, because we believe that's right and proper for the consumer.
So what's wrong with the legislation?
Well, we're quite happy with the 10-day cooling-off period. Mm-hmm. In fact, that is the exact recommendation that we made as an industry. The question that we are not happy about is the ban on deposits, because contrary to giving protection for consumers, that is actually going to undermine the protection systems that already exist. If, for the sake of argument, you buy in the United Kingdom, and we must bear in mind that timeshare is not simply something that happens in the south of Spain and in the Canaries.
All right.
There are some 80 timeshare resorts in this country. If you buy at a UK resort at the present time, the normal system is that you will pay a deposit, which is right and proper in our view. It is, after all, the normal commercial arrangement for anything you do in life.
Mm-hmm.
You pay your deposit, but you pay it to an independent stakeholder. That's to say, you pay it to a bank, or more particularly, you pay it to a specialist trustee company. That does more than simply hold your money until the contract is confirmed. That trustee company takes the responsibility for ensuring that the resort you are buying at has secure rights, that it's not mortgaged somewhere else, that you will have the right to use it for the 80 years or whatever it may be, that you will have the right to leave it to your children or to sell it to your friends or whatever.
Can you explain this to me, or just make this clear for me, that after this 10-day cooling-off period,
yes,
which we've discussed, would the deposit then be paid under this new legislation?
In which case,
it's only 10 days delay, isn't it? That doesn't sound too harsh.
Well, it's not a matter of delay, is it? Because as we have said all along to the European Commission, the Parliament, the Council of Ministers, it's not a matter of cash flow. It's a matter of customer commitment. I've always thought it very ironic that as an industry, I have made a booking, a very simple booking, at the House of Commons for a dinner next January. And immediately, and I made this booking, I think, in May of this year, I was asked for deposit.
Well, of course, but the point is that because of the high-pressure selling techniques, which Winston McMillan Scott was telling us very lucidly about, then, in a sense, you forfeited the right to have this deposit, haven't you? Not you personally, but you as an industry, the timeshare industry.
Well, I think one also has to put that into context. First of all, two things, really. One is that the trustee system, the independent stakeholder arrangements, they do exist outside the United Kingdom. Something like 70% of all timeshare contracts in Europe are actually signed up under the trustee system. So the lack of protection isn't quite as widespread as one might think. The second thing is that we keep, as a council, a continuing analysis of the written complaints of substance that come into us. And I can tell you that in the period January to June of this year, 6 months of this year, we had seven complaints on slow refund of deposits.
Okay, that is you, but that's not what happens, obviously, all over Europe. Otherwise, this legislation would not have been put in place.
Well, that's absolutely true, of course, which is why we have, as an industry, consistently asked for legislation. It's not a case here that there is a difference between an industry and the legislators. There has been a common ground concerning the need for sound, sensible, balanced legislation throughout Europe. We have no problem with that.
The problem still exists, doesn't it? I was hearing a story only a few months ago of somebody having a terrible time in the Canaries, curiously enough, with these high-pressure salesmen.
Yes, I think it would be entirely wrong to say that the problem does not exist at all. Otherwise, we would not have asked for legislation. I say the pity is, we feel, that here is a wonderful opportunity that has, to some extent, finished by being flawed.
Is there no way in which you can clean up the business in other parts of Europe, though?
Well, to some extent, it is happening. In fact, a further analysis we did, I think sometime last year, on the complaints that came out of, we selected, because, you know, it's usually the area where one hears the, as it were, horror stories. We looked at complaints from all sources in Spain, south of Spain, and the Canaries. And we had at that time, over, I think it was a 12-month period, with one particular company, which had eight resorts, there were 200 complaints. With a second company, also with eight resorts, a further 200 complaints. And then from all the other companies in the industry, which was something like 300 resorts in total, I think we had about 20 complaints.
It's 30 months before this directive comes into effect. Can the British public buy a timeshare in the meanwhile with confidence?
Oh, yes, by all means.
Even in the Canaries?
If they deal with a member of the Timeshare Council, yes, they can.
Okay, let's thank you very much indeed, Norman Burden, of the Timeshare Council. Let's have another word with Edward McMillan Scott. You were listening to that, I think.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. What's your reaction to what Mr. Burden was saying there? Not happy with this idea of banning deposits?
No, well, I can understand that the industry relies very heavily on getting people to put down a deposit, then they're effectively hooked in. And this is one of the, I think you made the point, that the industry has forfeited the right to have that. It is a unique situation that the European Union has legislated against one industry, but it's after a period of some years of enormous tolerance and allowing them self-regulation, and it simply has not worked. And the United Kingdom Parliament legislated 2 years ago for timeshare within the UK, again, singling out the timeshare industry because it had misbehaved. There have been many bankruptcies. The trustee system is very flawed. Most of these trustees are based in the Isle of Man, which itself is legislating now. It's outside the EC, but it's legislating to bring its own laws into line with the EC directive. And quite simply, Company A will sell you a timeshare. Its directors are also the directors of Company B, who owns the property. They bankrupt Company A, and they've still got the property and your money.
So despite the fact that Mr. Burden was trying to play down the problems to do with timeshares, you would say there have been great numbers of problems.
Oh, yes. There have been hundreds of bankruptcies. You can go down to the Canaries now, you'll find lots of resorts which are empty. They've been taken over by the banks. It's not a happy situation. It is the fault of the timeshare industry that it now has legislation to control it. And I hope that legislation will make for a more profitable and secure holiday for people than timeshare has been so far.
Edward McMillan Scott, many thanks indeed for joining us this morning here on LBC. Many thanks. And sorry about the problem with the line. It's now 12 minutes before 7.
From October the 5th, will you be listening in black and white or colour?
How far can you travel in 10 minutes? 20 miles, 10 miles, or a few yards? On London News 97.3 FM, you won't be far from the answer. Every 10 minutes will bring you the best travel news available. Not just the jams and train delays, the latest flight news, average speeds on the motorways, and all the news on tubes and buses. The complete travel picture. We'll get you there.
London News 97.3 FM. All news, all the time.
The headlines, it's been reported that Major James Hewitt has been banned from his former barracks following the publication of the book Princess in Love. Police in Northumbria fear a serial killer who's murdered three times may have struck again. And Tony Blair will make his first speech as Labour leader to the party's annual conference in Blackpool today. London's weather, a chilly start, some frost in the suburbs, dry and sunny, remaining cold, a high of 11 degrees Celsius. And the traffic situation. Fred Haskell is here. Good morning.
Good morning. Around the motorways at the moment, quite good. No major problems, obviously building up as you'd expect. But looking at the Blackpool Tunnel Southern Approach, about 15 minutes ago, we had a broken down vehicle. They usually get these out very quickly, but it does cause delays, so watch out there. Tower Bridge Road, down to Grange Road, the lights are out. Same situation at Liam Court Road and Streatham High Road. Now, this is a multiple phase junction, so do watch out crossing that one. Camden Street, junction to Camden Road, we've got roadworks there at the present time, plus a burst water main. They tell me it was a 40-foot fountain this morning. And if you come out the house this morning very early, you'll find a bit of frost on the windscreen. So watch out for that. There is some surface water there. Maidenvale Junction, Sutherland Avenue, lights out. Farringdon Road, Junction, Clerkenwell Road, the lights are out. Chelsea Bridge, one lane northbound. And earlier on this morning, Knightsbridge, West Bend and the Downsleep had an earlier accident. That's been clear, but some of the debris is still on the road. On the Underground, the Victoria Line, slight delays after earlier signal problems. And on British Rail, two cancellations. Barking to Gospel Oak, the 637 didn't go. Gillingham to Cannon Street, the 734 doesn't go. LBC Travel News.
If you're in a jam and feel fit to explode, turn to Holmes Place Health Clubs and get fit for life instead. For your nearest Holmes Place Health Club, look in Yellow Pages.
Ten to seven, just a reminder, our Mystery Newsmakers competition after 8 o'clock. No, after 7 o'clock this morning, between 7 and 8, £860 is the cash prize today. Good luck when you have a crack at that, somewhere between 7 and 8. Now then, let's take a look at sport. Dominic Allen is with us. Very good morning, Dominic.
Good morning, Rick. Good morning, everyone. Cyriano Ballesteros has won the German Masters Golf Championship. He beat Ernie Els and Jose Maria Alazabal at the first extra hole in a sudden-death playoff. They had tied with 18 under par 4 on totals of 270. In the FA Premiership, Leicester City and Coventry City drew 2-2 at Filbert Street. Two players were sent off there, Gary Gillespie of Coventry and Jimmy Willis of Leicester. Sale Rugby Club has suspended their prop forward Paul Smith for two matches for punching the England scrum half Dowie Morris during the game against Oral on Saturday. The punch that led Morris being taken to hospital wasn't seen by the referee, but Sale acted after studying a video of the incident. There are three race meetings today. They're at Redcar, Warwick and Newton Abbott.
Now then, Severiano Ballesteros is back with a vengeance.
Yes, no, certainly not a spent force now. Remember, he won the Benson Hedges International back in May. This is his second tournament, and a tremendous win for him. A final round, 67. He was 6 strokes behind Danny Els at the start of that final round, and then having, when they were all level, 18 under par after 4 rounds, he birdied the first playoff hole, extra hole, to win really quite an extraordinary victory. So now, he's second in the order of merit behind Colin Montgomery and ahead of Olazabal.
A lot of people thought he'd gone, in a sense, had it over the top peak.
Yes, and he's certainly proved them wrong. He's enjoying his golf now, and I think he's got quite a bit to go yet. But it's very, very good performance by him. And, beating Olazabal to start with, the US Masters title holder, and Ernie Els, who's playing so well this year, good performance.
Are we going to see him in England this year?
Yes, he comes over fairly soon, well, in Scotland anyway, for the... Well, he came over for the Dunhill Masters, didn't he? He's got one more tournament in this country anyway.
Right. Not at Wentworth, though?
I think not. You know, I really can't... I'll find out before I come back.
Okay, that's a good idea. Yeah, because I'm not sure either. I know there was talk of it, but let's talk about football, shall we? Two sent off in the Premiership.
Yes, this FIFA clampdown. Two players sent off last night. Gary Gillespie... a late tackle on Julian Joachim, which it's in which by all accounts looked rather harsh. And then about a quarter of an hour later, Jimmy Willis, the Leicester defender, sent off, and really people didn't even think that was a yellow card offence. It looked a perfectly fair tackle. And I think the referee maybe thought he used the elbow, but certainly a pretty controversial couple of sendings off there.
In a sense, this is all after the World Cup, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's that FIFA clampdown, which started in the World Cup, and maybe our referees are taking it rather more, or being rather more strict on these offences than some of the referees on the continent, but she's getting to a stage where people are getting rather upset. I mean, Alan Birchenall, the public relations officer at Leicester, used to play for Leicester City, of course, he had a bit of a go last night, and Glenn Hoddle complained the night before, after Chelsea's game.
Do you think the football is any prettier this season, though, as a result of the new sort of regulations?
Well, yes, up to a point, but, and we have seen some very good football this year, but, I mean, it's a contact sport, let's face it.
Hmm. Let's move on to a real contact sport, that is rugby.
Yes, and I think very good action by Sale. Paul Smith, their prop forward, punched Dowie Morris. Morris was taken to hospital. This is a game against Oral on Saturday. Morris went off to hospital, and the referee took no action. He didn't see it. But the club did. They started a video of it, and they've suspended Paul Smith for 2 matches. I mean, that's considerably shorter than he would have been suspended had he been sent off.
Mm. Dominic, thanks very much indeed. And more on the Severiano Ballesteros story a little later this morning. It's now 6 before 7.
From October the 5th, will you be listening in black and white or colour?
The world's a smaller place. You need the news like never before. I'm Michael Wilson. Keep up with the latest on London News 97.3 FM with me from 6 a.m. Monday to Friday.
And with me, Claire Catford. Don't get up in the morning with anything less than the full picture of what's happening in the world and why it matters to you.
The whole spectrum of news and information as it happens.
The most complete travel picture and unrivaled weather forecasts.
The programme.
The Balanced Breakfast.
London News, 97.3 FM. All news, all the time.
Now then, the National Rivers Authority is 5 years old today, and in the Thames region they certainly believe congratulations are in order. The NRA says it's made huge achievements, the most important, a 10% improvement in the quality of river water. On the line is the scientific manager for the Thames region, Dr. Ian Adams. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So congratulations. 10%.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think it's very encouraging.
How have you managed to do it?
Well, since we were formed from the water authorities in 1989. As you say, we've had 5 years, and it's been 5 years effort. We've talked to people, we've persuaded people to take action to minimise pollution. We've persuaded Thames Water utilities to spend quite a lot of money on sewage treatment works. And the upshot of it is, as you say, that we've had overall a 10% improvement in water quality. In Thames region, we've done a bit better than that. There's a reason that a whole proportion of good rivers has increased substantially, and even in the small rivers in London, like the Wandle and the Pin and so on, the overall lengths of good quality have improved by a factor of about 3.
That's a miracle.
Quite good news.
That's not any news of congratulations. It's a miracle, isn't it, really? Because, you know, people really don't, on these little streams, take very little care about them, do they?
Well, it's encouraging. I think it's everybody should be congratulated. Everybody takes action. People now realise that they shouldn't pour things down the drain and pour things into the river and use the rivers as their rubbish dump. And I think everybody is helping. People now understand. We try to teach school children and others. And our general impression is that everybody is cooperating. Everyone is trying.
Have you been using a lot of high-tech equipment in all this?
We use some. We have equipment on the River Thames, for example, the Tideway, which automatically monitors the quality all of the time so that we can take action with the with Thames Water utilities if we do get a problem.
Having said all that, of course, you wouldn't really want to swim in the Thames even now, would you?
I wouldn't want to swim in the Thames, not largely because swimming in natural water courses is a bit dicey anyway. There's all sorts of hazards. I mean, broken glass on the bottom is the least of them.
Yeah, but having said that, I mean, the Thames is worse than many.
The Tideway. The Tideway certainly isn't fit to swim in, but, I mean, it's not surprising.
Well, let me ask you this. How much further can you improve it?
We can improve it as far as people would like it improved within limits. The limit is how much people are prepared to pay, in principle.
Mm-hmm.
No one can make further improvements. We can ask Thames Water utilities to make further improvements to their sewage works, but it all costs money. I mean, as you know, the improvements to the Tideway, the ones that resulted in the salmon coming back, were as a result of 20 to 30 years of investment by the local communities, local government and so on, and it was several hundreds of millions of pounds. We can carry on. It's really a question of whether the community as a whole wishes to spend that sort of money on further improvements.
Well, we'd certainly like to see it. As you say, it's a question of finance, I guess. How many fish are there swimming down here in the Lower Thames nowadays?
Well, we sort of stopped counting when the number of different species that have come back got over 100. So we've got well over 100 species have come back compared to, 15 years ago when there was nothing at all apart from a few eels.
One of the problems of recent years, of course, has been rivers drying up, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. One of the things, the characteristic of our sort of 5 years was the very severe drought in 1991-92, which had an effect on quality, had an effect on drying up rivers. We've got one or two rivers that have dried up because of over-abstraction for public water supply. Misborne, for example, in the Chilterns.
Anything you can do about that?
We are doing something. We're talking to the water companies, trying to reorganise the way they take water, reorganise their pattern to try to get some flow back. But again, it's fairly expensive. But there are things that can be done, and in cooperation with the water utilities, we hope we can achieve something. Certainly on the Darrenth in southwest London, some work is being done by Thames Water Utilities and by the NRA to see if we can get the water back.
Dr. Ian Adams, we have to leave it there. Many thanks indeed. The National Rivers Authority, 5 years old today, and we'll have no carping about it this morning. It's 1 minute to seven. Traffic news. Fred Hausker. Sorry.
You're going to regret saying that. Come on, this time in the morning, no. Well, let's have a look around what's going on. Motorways, no major problems. Blackwall Tunnel Southern Approach is now back to sunny the sands. An earlier broken down vehicle caused that problem. Tower Bridge Road, Junction Grange Road, the lights are out. Liam Court Road, Junction Streatham High Road, the lights are out. And Camden Street, Junction Camden Road, a burst wall remain plus road works. Do watch out for that one. Chelsea Bridge, one lane northbound. And earlier on in Knightsbridge, westbound down slip into the underpass. There was an earlier accident, now clear but causing delays. Underground and British Rail, no major problems. LBC Travel News.
Buy Kodak Gold films at participating mobile service stations and you can get 50% more film free. And we'll give you a pound off developing. For extra free photography, drive into Mobile.
LBC News Talk 97.3 News.
It's 7 o'clock. Four Scandinavian ferry companies have announced they're welding bow doors together on their roll-on, roll-off ferries. The move comes after investigations into the Baltic Sea ferry disaster revealed the bow door on the Estonia had been torn off. The Labour leader's preparing to give a speech to the party conference today at unifying and pacifying the party faithful. It'll be Tony Blair's first keynote delivery at the annual conference since he became leader. This morning he's been brushing aside claims of an embarrassing rift between himself and the unions.
We're a party that is strong and confident and united, and I will be setting out our programme to build us an economy of prosperity and of opportunity, and a more just, more fair society, a decent society. And that's what we will be doing for the people of this country.
Cars have been destroyed and shop windows smashed during ceremonies to mark 4 years of German unification. Trouble flared in the city of Bremen as crowds went on the rampage. Chancellor Helmut Kohl appealed to Germans on both sides of the former border to be understanding and patient. It's reported that Major James Hewitt has been banned from his barracks following his claims that he had an affair with the Princess of Wales. The former cavalry officer is under fire from many former colleagues following the allegations in the book Princess in Love. Publicist Max Clifford says the reputation of the former lifeguards officer has been dealt a severe blow.
There's no sympathy towards James Hewitt. In order to attract and sell the vast amount of books that obviously they're hoping to, had they been able to somehow get public sympathy to this man, the sales would have been 5 times the amount I anticipate they will be now.
More than 100 people have been detained by American troops in the two largest cities in Haiti. U.S. soldiers also stormed the headquarters of the right-wing Frapper movement, arresting 75 members of the organization. President Clinton has suffered another setback in his cabinet. His agriculture secretary, Mike Espy, has quit in the wake of claims that he allegedly accepted gifts from organisations regulated by his department. For Reuters Radio News, I'm Joanne Malin.
Austin.
I didn't know you were an opera fan.
Oh, yes, I saw Madame Butterfly when she was still a caterpillar. I'm surprised you could afford a ticket, though. Well, actually, I mean, it's only called Grand Opera because that's how much the tickets cost.
I'm here thanks to Alliance and Leicester.
Alliance and Leicester?
Yes, with their new limited edition mortgages, you get your valuation fee refunded on completion. So I spent mine on this. What's more, you also get 1 year's free unemployment insurance.
I'm hardly going to need that, am I?
No, I suppose you do need to be employed in the first place.
Yeah, well, for your information, Austin, I am gainfully employed. Anyway, I must dash. I've got clients to entertain.
Clients?
Well, sort of. Drinks, ice creams, programs.
Your home is at risk if you do not keep up repayments on a mortgage or other loan secured on it. For more details about Alliance and Leicester's limited edition mortgages, call in at your local branch. Mortgages subject to status and valuation. Security is required. Applicants must be 18 or over. Valuation referred to is an option 1 valuation. Ring 0800 535454 for a written quotation. Alliance and Leicester Building Society.
October the 4th, a Tuesday morning, 3 minutes past seven. A very good morning to you from me, Richard Vaughan, on the final LBC Morning Report. Coming up in the second hour, that book is causing a sensation. People may condemn it, but the story of Diana's alleged love affair with a dashing cavalry officer is selling in its thousands. We talk to the leading royal watcher, James Whittaker, of the Daily Mirror. The final proposals are published on the highly controversial Channel Tunnel high-speed rail link between London and the Kent coast. We hope to cross to Germany, where there have been serious disturbances on the fourth anniversary of reunification. And we take a serious look at discrimination in the armed forces, particularly in the Household Cavalry, right here in London. Plus, of course, our Mystery Newsmakers competition, the cash prize this morning, £860. All on the LBC Morning Report, a very good morning to you. Here's Robin Amlow, first of all, with the financial news. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. And both the pound and the dollar are under pressure in the foreign exchanges this morning on worries about inflation and interest rates. They're both down against the Deutschmark. The pound's down two-thirds of a pfennig, just over 2 marks 45. The dollar down half a pfennig, 1 mark 55 and a quarter. The dollar's also down against the yen, down half a yen at 99 and a third. Sterling holding its own against the weaker American currency, though, a fraction higher, just under $1.58. After yesterday's slump for the FTSE index, down more than 46 points, there's only one of the markets in the Far East is really taking a battering this morning. That's the All Ordinaries in Sydney, which is down 33 points at 1997. Elsewhere, the markets are ahead, helped by the fact that the Dow Jones managed to close little changed. It was up 3 points at 38.46 last night on Wall Street. In the Far East markets, as I say, apart from Sydney, they're all showing ahead. I beg your pardon, they're not all showing ahead. Tokyo has just moved down. Tokyo index just before the close, now down 56 points, 19,594. Elsewhere, the Hang Seng in Hong Kong is 20 points ahead, 95.12, and the Straits Times in Singapore up 20 at 23.69.
Thanks, Robin. And on to sport, Dominic Allen.
Severiano Ballesteros has won the German Masters Golf Championship. He beat Ernie Els and Jose Maria Elazabel at the first extra hole in a sudden death playoff. They're tied with 18 under par four and totals of 270. In the FA Premiership, Leicester City and Coventry City drew 2-2 at Filbert Street. Two players were sent off there, Gary Gillespie of Coventry and Jimmy Willis of Leicester. Tony Adams will captain England in next week's friendly international against Romania in place of the injured David Platt. The only surprise in the 19-strong squad chosen by Terry Venables is one of omission. Andy Cole has again been overlooked. Sale Rugby Club have suspended their prop forward Paul Smith for two matches for punching the England scrum half Dowie Morris during the game against Oral on Saturday. The punch that led to Morris being taken to hospital wasn't seen by the referee, but Sale acted after studying a video of the incident. There are three race meetings today. They're at Redcar, Warwick and Newton Abbott.
And let's see what the weather has for us today. Ian Forsyth is at the London Weather Centre. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Well, it's a cold and chilly start to the day around London. Probably our coldest morning since last spring. Temperatures at the moment just above freezing in the outskirts and a fairly widespread frost on the grass and cars. It's getting light just now and there's hardly any cloud up there, so I think we can expect a dry, sunny morning. But the temperature's struggling up to only about 8 or 9 by midday. Then even in this afternoon with the sunshine, I think 11 Celsius at best, that's 52 Fahrenheit. Tonight, dry and chilly again, temperatures dropping sharply after dusk and a widespread ground frost in the early hours. In town, lowest temperatures 4 or 5, that's about 40 Fahrenheit, and just above freezing in the air around about the outskirts. This is Ian Forsyth at London Weather Centre.
Now then, it's 7 minutes past 7. The Princess of Wales appears in public today at her first official engagement since the publication of the sensational book alleging she had an affair with a former cavalry officer, James Hewitt. She'll meet members of an army-led expedition to Africa at Kensington Palace. The book, Princess in Love, is a sellout, and the publishers Bloomsbury have ordered an instant reprint, and Fleet Street devotes yards of newsprint to the story this morning in the Mirror, no fewer than 14 pages. Well, joining us from the LBC radio car is the Mirror's Royal Watcher, James Whittaker. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning to you. You've had a chance to read the book, no doubt, by now. What do you make of it?
Well, it's fascinating, it's very gushing, and it's incredibly indiscreet and terribly unfair to Diana.
Now, you say indiscreet. Perhaps we shouldn't talk too much about the indiscretions. Do you think it's fact, and or is it somewhat fictional, as the Daily Star seems to imply this morning?
I think it has been quite heavily embellished, but to me, the essence of it is most likely pretty accurate. I know Anna Pasternak, and she is a woman of great integrity, and she has researched this pretty carefully, and she is obviously convinced that it is accurate what she has written.
Now, you've written some pretty outrageous things about the royalty of the last few years. Do you think this book should have been written?
I suppose on the basis that you've just said and on the fact that I think stories are there to be written, yes, I do.
Really? But you sound heavy-hearted when you say
yes,
that.
Yes, because it is a terrible thing to do, but often you have to separate yourself as a human being as yourself from a journalist. And if you were a really decent, thoroughly nice person who wasn't involved in that, of course it shouldn't even be talked about, let alone written. But the people involved, particularly Anna, is a journalist, and what journalists want are stories, and she's written one.
Are you suggesting that journalists aren't really decent, nice people?
No, I'm not totally suggesting that, but I think you do have to separate the two. I've been through many crises in my life when, as a father of three children, as the husband of a wonderful woman, I have written and done things that I don't particularly admire.
Talk to me now about your relationship with Diana yourself, will you? Your headline this morning is I Fear for Di, and you've been talking to her recently, I think.
Yes, it was in Lech in Austria this year while skiing, and yes, I did. I said I was very concerned for her. It was at various levels. One was generally how she was being treated, and just as importantly, the fact that she didn't have any bodyguards with her anymore, and I said, yes, I was very concerned about it. She said, don't worry, I'm going to be all right. All the signs to me are that she isn't all right. I think she is a supreme actress. I think she's a person who is doing so well, but I am terribly fearful that she is going to crack shortly, because I don't believe anybody on earth can put up with the pressure that she's had to lately.
Well, she certainly put up a good front yesterday, and today, I gather, she has an official engagement?
Yeah, we won't actually see her. It is, as you said in the news, it is, in fact, within Kensington Palace, and we won't see her. People will go to her.
But, I mean, having seen the pictures in the paper this morning, she doesn't look too distraught, does
but,
she?
No, but can you imagine? Just think for yourself, if this had happened to you, how you would feel on it. And, as I say, she is a supreme actress, and she puts on a terrific front. Behind that, though, I think she must be feeling desperate. I do know that she has begun to put the word out that this is fantasy that Hewitt's written, mm-hmm. that there, in fact, was never any affair. There was certainly no physical contact between them, except maybe a kiss. In fact, we've seen photos of that. But she is saying quite clearly to friends, he wanted to make love to me, I wouldn't let him.
Now, Major Hewitt has been banned from his old barracks, we gather.
Yeah, this is a story, in fact, I read in the Daily Mirror yesterday. I don't know why everybody's getting excited today on it. Yes, there's a wonderful expression. His name's been left at the gate, I think it is. And that means that if he turns up anywhere near anything to do with the Lifeguards Regiment, he is told to get on his horse or bike and push off.
Is he going to be banned from decent society, do you think, or is he going
course.
To become a sort of celebrity?
No, he'll be a celebrity.
Now, beneath the headline, Betrayed by the Rat She Loved, the Mail says that privately the princess has insisted to friends they never had sex, he wanted to, but she never let it happen. The Daily Star declares on its front page that Hewitt's claims about the princess are about as credible as a schoolboy's boasts behind a bike shed, and urges the public to make a donation to charity rather than buy a copy of Princess in Love. The paper devotes four inside pages to the story, most of it devoted to further flack aimed at the royal rotter, although there is also an account of the book's main allegations. But the Star's coverage is pretty restrained compared with many of the tabloids, and even the broadsheets are getting plenty of coverage this morning. The Times, for example, reports on its front page that Hewitt has been banned from entering his barracks in the wake of the book's publication, and on an inside page features articles on the book Hewitt and Pasternak. The Daily Telegraph says a friend of the princess reported her as denying having an affair with Hewitt, claiming he lives in a fantasy world. In The Independent, the reaction of Buckingham Palace is quoted, "We are not going to waste any more time on this tawdry little book." But The Guardian says the standing of the monarchy may have been significantly undermined by the publication. It says, although the descriptions of the princess's alleged adultery have no direct constitutional implications, it serves further to damage the moral authority of the royal family. One privy councillor says it's making the royal family a worldwide laughingstock, and the paper quotes Harold Brooks Baker of Burke's Peerage as saying, "We are extremely close to the end of the House of Windsor." 6.5 to 8. Now, here's rather a different spin on a sports story. The University of East London is joining forces with West Ham Football Club to educate staff, management and players about the best way to operate. Certainly sounds like a novel idea for the Hammers. On the line's the secretary of the club, Tom Finn. Good morning to you.
Morning, Richard.
What's involved exactly, Tom?
Well, it's a question of the university providing us with an educational advisor who will come into the club once a fortnight and talk to the staff. That's non-playing staff and young and senior players about education.
Sounds highly intellectual for a football club.
Well, it's come about as a follow-up to a pilot project we've been running for 6 months now, primarily amongst the non-playing staff, and that's been very successful. 21 employees have taken advantage of it, and we're now extending it to the players.
But what's the reason for it?
I think we've recognised that there's a need from talking to the staff who feel they need career development advice, and as a caring employer, that's something that we feel we should provide. On the football side, as we recruit more and more young players, so parents are concerned about the fallout rate from professional football, which as a consequence means that they're more concerned about the educational opportunities for their boys as well as the football training side.
Well, of course, I mean, a professional football career is short at best, but I suppose some kids drop out very early, do they?
They do. Statistics show that of every four boys that join a club at 16, only one is still playing at 20. And as finance has bitten into the sport, so playing squads are smaller more and more players are going out of the game.
I suppose some people might say you shouldn't try to take kids away from education at 16, therefore.
Well, it can be a very lucrative career, football, of course it's what they want to do, and it is our national sport, and the priority will continue to be their football training. Mm-hmm. But they do have time, and one day a week in their first 2 years is devoted to non-football training, and it's up to the clubs really to make sure that that's put to best use.
Are they keen learners?
They are. They differ. Some are more academically orientated than others.
I'm sure.
But we have players who are taking physiotherapy courses, and with one player who's taking a management course to prepare for the day when they do leave the game.
Sounds like a very good idea, Tom. The very best of luck with it. That's Tom Finn, who's the secretary of West Ham Football Club. And it's very nearly 3 minutes to eight. Eczema is often regarded as a trivial skin condition, dismissed or ridiculed by the general public. But for sufferers, it can mean a life of constant physical distress, coupled with a lack of sympathy for its effects. Well, the National Eczema Society has launched National Eczema Week to promote understanding amongst the general public. And its director, Graham Ball, is with us, the deputy director, I should say, to explain some of the events. You're hoping, in a sense, to get people to be more aware, I guess.
Yes, that's the aim of this week, is to bring awareness to everybody, really, of the problems associated with this often distressing skin condition.
Well, it's a skin condition that makes you scratch a lot, I guess. Is that right?
Yes, in its mildest form, it's merely a tendency to dry skin, but in its more severe form, it can be a most devastating disease affecting the whole body. It really does affect every part of a person's life.
Sleeping particularly?
Well, sleep disturbance is one of the things that we've been researching, and that has shown quite graphically what the problems are. It doesn't affect just the person with the disease, but also the whole family, the brothers, the sisters, the mother, the father, and all the relatives involved in trying to cope with this distressing problem.
Is it a problem that can be cured easily or not?
There's no actual cure for it, no. It's a condition that can be well controlled with Western medicines, yes. Mm-hmm.
And how do you do that? I mean, what sort of advice will you be giving this week, for example?
Well, we give the advice that it's not just the clinical aspects that have to be well looked after. You have to go and see your doctor and get a regime worked out with him. There's also all the other aspects, so the whole lifestyle problems. And we can tell people how to control that side of it, the things they should be wearing, the conditions that they should be looking to live in with it, in their homes and bedrooms.
What does that mean? Minimizing dust, for example?
Yes, the house dust mite is a real problem, and there are real measures that can be taken to effectively control it, if you know what to do.
Yeah. But what about just before going to bed? What do you do for a child to make him more comfortable?
Well, things like a nice warm bath and a bedtime drink, a good cuddle is often a great answer as well, lots of love and attention. And not only that, but also not forgetting that the other members of the family, little brother and sister, may well be a little bit jealous about that. And getting everybody involved in it and everybody attacking the problem.
And no doubt it affects life during the day as well. I mean, things like sporting activities.
Yes, I mean, it's a real problem. Sports, swimming is a real problem. The way that people perceive skin conditions means that people with eczema very often don't want to go swimming. And
it's a pretty widespread problem, actually, isn't it?
That's right. We're not talking about a minor problem. It affects between 10 and 20% of the population. I mean, that's gracious. 5 to 10 million people will have a real problem with eczema.
Yeah, and more awareness in National Eczema Week, which starts yesterday, I guess. We're underway already, are we?
Yes, we're well underway with lots of attention. Thank you.
Okay, and thank you for talking to us about it this morning, Graham Ball, the Deputy Director of the National Eczema Society. No DHL London lookout. A quick word from Fred Haskell on the traffic.
M4 eastbound from Junction 5, Langley through to Junction 3, that's the Hayes turn off, very slow going there. Heathrow Spur and the Perimeter Road, very slow as well. A316 Hospital Bridge Road, an accident there. And on the M25 clockwise approaching Junction 6, long tail back to Godston, possible accident between Junction 7 and 8. Blackwall Tunnel Southern Approach, very slow there. Rest of it, very slow as well. LBC Travel News.
If you're in a jam and feel fit to explode, turn to Holmes Place Health Clubs and get fit for life instead. For your nearest Holmes Place Health Club, look in Yellow Pages.
LBC News Talk 97.3 News.
It's 8 o'clock. Several Scandinavian ferry companies have announced they're welding bow doors shut in the wake of the Baltic ferry disaster. The move comes after underwater cameras revealed the bow door on the Estonia had been torn off. Reuters' Simon Hayden in Stockholm says the wider implications of the disaster are now hitting home.
People are finally beginning to think to talk about whether they should be travelling on ferries. Four companies in the Scandinavian region this morning are now welding their bow doors together. So they're still rolling on and rolling off, but it just takes a little bit more time and makes routes slightly less profitable for the owners.
Tony Blair will demand unity and loyalty in his keynote speech to the party faithful in Blackpool today. In his first address as leader, he'll outline his vision of Britain under Labour, and he'll condemn the Conservatives' record in office. Former party leader Neil Kinnock says that no one will be in any doubt where Mr Blair stands on the key issues.
In terms of demonstrating the direction in which he's travelling, the direction in which he's leading the Labour Party, I'm certain that it's in the character of the man to lay that out in terms that nobody can misunderstand.
The Princess of Wales makes her first public appearance today since allegations that she had an affair with Major James Hewitt. 75,000 copies of the book Princess in Love, which claims to tell the story of the relationship, have been sold in less than 24 hours. Diana is said to be upset about the publication. But author Anna Pasternak says that was never her intention.
I can't speak for what the Princess of Wales's reaction is going to be, but I know that if she reads it, she will see that my motives only came from, they were pure, as it were. I feel that there is a great sympathy and I have great empathy for her, and I think that any woman who's in touch with herself emotionally will relate to many sections of that book.
A landmark judgment will be delivered today on claims by so-called Lloyd's Names that they suffered multi-million pound losses because of negligence by insurance agents. Many names, including a number of Tory MPs, are said to be facing bankruptcy if the decision goes against them. For Reuters Radio News, I'm Catherine Mitchell.
You'll get more than you bargained for with the Metro Rio Grande. It now sports remote-controlled central locking and alarm, and 1 year's free comprehensive insurance, subject to status. The Rio range starts at just £5,995 on the road at participating dealers. So head for your Rover dealer or call 0345 186 186 pronto.
It's nearly 3 minutes past eight, October the 4th, a Tuesday morning. A very good morning to you from me, Richard Vaughan, on the LBC Morning Report. And coming up in the final hour of the LBC Morning Report, more on that book. People may condemn it, but the story of Diana's alleged love affair with a cavalry officer is selling in its thousands. We hope to talk to a leading Conservative MP and constitutional expert who says Diana must ban the book from any worldwide sales. Police in Northumbria hunting a serial killer, fear he may have struck again. We'll preview Tony Blair's big day at the Labour Party conference in Blackpool, which he addresses for the first time as Labour leader. And still no winner in our Mystery Newsmakers competition. The cash prize stands now at £880. Try and win it in the Simon Bates Show after 9 o'clock this morning. So now, 3.5 minutes past eight, let's catch up with the financial news. Here's Robin once again.
Shares are expected to recover some of Monday's sharp losses, encouraged by a steadier overnight performance for the Dow Jones Index when the London market opens in about 25 minutes' time. We're looking for the FTSE to start off about 5 or 10 points up. One of the things that will be knocking it back, though, perhaps it's not that much of a surprise, but this morning merchant bank Hambros warns that first-half profits are likely to halve. The announcement comes after the statement yesterday from S.G. Warburg to a similar effect. By contrast, contract catering and medical services group Compass says trading so far is ahead of expectations and it expects its Canteen acquisition to make a significant contribution to the group. And in profits out today, with companies with results generally showing well, Lamont Holdings' first half profits jumped by 39%. The Irish company reports profits of 5.62 million punts. Rain Industries profits 13.14 million, that's up 22% on last time. And British Building profits for the year up 2.5 million, that's up 200,000, around 8%. Only one company with figures so far showing profits down, and that's Silent Night. Figures show profits down around a fifth to £4.1 million. In the foreign exchanges at the moment, the pound is trading just over $1.58 and at 2 marks 45.
Thank you, Robin. And on to Dominic Allen here with this morning's sports news.
Severiano Ballesteros has won the German Masters Golf. He beat Ernie Els and Jose Maria Alazabal at the first extra hole in a sudden-death playoff. They're tied with 18 under par four-run totals of 270. In the FA Premiership, Leicester City and Coventry City drew 2-2 at Filbert Street. Two players were sent off, Gary Gillespie of Coventry and Jimmy Willis of Leicester. This evening, the focus switches to the Coca-Cola League Cup with four London sides in action. Tottenham take a 6-3 lead into their second leg match against Watford at White Hart Lane. Crystal Palace have to overcome a one-goal deficit against third division Lincoln City at Selhurst Park. Chelsea take a 1-0 lead to Bournemouth, and Millwall go to Roker Park with a 2-1 lead over Sunderland. The New Zealand Cricket Council has confirmed that its tour of India will go ahead as planned. They've accepted assurances from the Indian authorities that the plague situation is now under control.
The West Indies, who take part in a three-team series of one-day internationals with India and New Zealand, will start their tour a week tomorrow, 7 days later than originally planned. There are 3 race meetings today. They're at Redcar, Warwick and Newton Abbott.
Thank you, Dominic. And after the sport, it's the weather forecast. Ian Forsyth is at the London Weather Centre. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. Well, it looks like a lovely morning out there. There's lots of sunshine, but it is cold. Temperatures at the moment only about 1 degree. That's 34 Fahrenheit out in the outskirts. We'll keep that sunshine right throughout the day, hardly any cloud at all, and staying dry. But cold as well. Temperatures only up to about 8 degrees by lunchtime, and then struggling up to about 11, that's 52 later this afternoon. Tonight, dry and cold again, temperatures dropping sharply after dark, and a widespread ground frost in the suburbs in the early hours of the morning. In town, lowest air temperatures about 4 or 5 degrees, that's 40 Fahrenheit, but down to about 1 in some of the colder parts in the outskirts. This is Ian Forsyth at London Weather Centre.
It's 7 minutes past eight. Very good morning to you. It's Tony Blair's big day at the Labour Party conference in Blackpool. He's expected to call for unity from the faithful. And on the line from Blackpool, our political editor, Ed Boyle. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. I hope this is a better line today.
It is. Much better. Good to have you with us. Not a very good day for Tony Blair yesterday either, not only you.
No, that's perfectly true. It wasn't the most perfect day for Tony Blair. It didn't go all his way. Maybe it was unfair of those who attempt to stage manage these things to expect it to go all his way. Yes, there were defeats. Well, we don't know whether there were technical defeats. One of the complications of Labour Party conferences under the new voting procedures is they haven't counted all the votes. Well, they have by now, but they won't announce them to conference from yesterday's votes on various motions until this morning. But be that as it may, the leadership is not expecting defeats. It's more the rhetoric and the brickbats that have been aimed at Mr. Blair over the apparent fudging of policy and the lack of detail on things like the minimum wage and so forth, plus those elections to the National Executive Committee, which don't impact in a numerical sense on Mr. Blair's power and control over the party, but do show that the left is still in there and still in there fighting.
Very much so. Dennis Skinner and Diane Abbott voted onto the National Executive. I think a lot of people were taken rather by surprise, weren't they?
They were certainly taken by surprise by Diane Abbott, perhaps by Dennis Skinner, because he was kicked off a couple of years ago, and once you put a pilot down, you don't expect to pick him up again. But the left is certainly satisfied by those two. Mr. Blair is clearly disappointed by not having getting his two key henchmen, or one of them a henchwoman, Mo Molan, the National Heritage Shadow Secretary, and Chris Smith, one of their environment spokesmen, onto the NEC. They were both expected to get on, and they didn't. So there is now not a leftward-leaning NEC. On the contrary, it's still very firmly dominated, 22 in favour of Mr. Blair's line, 2 or 3 who might, on occasions, but I have to use the word might, because this is a party of that's trying to show unity, that might rock the boat from time to time, but not rock it very, very visibly.
What's the power and influence of the National Executive Committee compared, say, with the Shadow Cabinet?
It's the internal machine. It's a blooming nuisance, I dare say, if any Labour leader was prepared to be that honest. It has to be there because it's constitutionally part of the party, and it sets a kind of agenda, but it can interfere with policy decisions that the leadership has made outside of a conference period. It's a bit like, I suppose you might call it, delegated powers in a local authority. In other words, when local councillors aren't sitting, they have to leave it to executive officers, officials, to get on with the donkey work of running the council. The NEC is that and more. So it can be a nuisance as well as a plus, provided you can control it absolutely. Don't worry about that, though, because Mr. Blair still does control it absolutely in numerical terms. It would take a nightmare scenario for his majority to be whittled away to non-existent terms. Mm. We're not talking in those terms here in Blackpool. We're talking about the left having proved that they still exist and proved that they've got a voice. But today, at least, I'm pretty certain they're going to shut up and listen, because there's going to be something good to listen to.
That is a Tony Blair speech you're suggesting, is it?
The first Tony Blair speech in his position as leader of the party, a difficult speech to make, a speech in which he can't afford to add much in the way of meat to the bones of these philosophical policies on we want full employment, we want a minimum wage, we want to root out the sleaze and alleged corruption in society brought about by 15 years of Tory government. It is going to be an attacking speech, from all I can gather, a speech that emphasises Labour's commitment to fairness, to trust, and to opportunity in the future, but attacking the Conservatives every inch of the way. And, of course, delegates will love that.
And what about the unions? They've been talking about using their block votes. Any signs of that thus far, really?
Well, I mean, I'll know better in an hour or so when the votes have actually been counted from yesterday's peculiar goings-on that we weren't entirely expecting, with union leader upon union leader, well, at least three or four of them, standing up and openly criticising, or criticising in the kind of uncoded terms that you would never get at a Conservative conference. My own instinct is that that will go away now. There are one or two issues later in the week which will cause an element of controversy, like the desire to have more women MPs and therefore more women parliamentary candidates, possibly all women parliamentary candidates in some cases. The party and Mr. Blair wants more women candidates, but instinctively he doesn't want all women candidates, because that is balancing the equation far too much on one side. So there could be little sparks over that, but I wouldn't expect any major upsets. However, in Blackpool, where the wind blows and the sea pounds the beach and it's blooming cold, anything can happen. But today, at least, expect unity, expect standing ovations, expect a glowing new 41-year-old leader on the platform being more or less raised to the shoulders of this very, very large hall, absolutely packed to the walls.
If you say so, Ed, I'll expect. Thank you very much indeed. Ed Boyle, our political editor up there in Blackpool for the Labour Party conference. 8:12. There have been violent clashes in the German port city of Bremen on the fourth anniversary of the reunification of Germany. Crowds went on the rampage and cars were overturned. Chancellor Helmut Kohl has appealed for calm and called on the people from both sides of Germany to live in peace. Bremen was chosen as the focal point of the celebrations, and earlier thousands of people walked through the city to mark the anniversary. Well, our Bonn correspondent, or rather the Reuters chief correspondent in Germany from Bonn, that's Thomas Hennigan, has been talking about all this to Max Cotton.
In Bremen, where they had the main festivities for Unity Day this year, there were several hundred anarchists who went through town smashing windows, protesting against the Unity Festival. That was on Monday. The night before, they had the same groups rampaging through town, set fire to a few cars, throwing rocks and things like that.
So who were these groups?
These are anarchist groups, some from Bremen, some will come in from as far as Berlin or Frankfurt. And they're basically against any sign of nationalism. They take this to be a sign of nationalism, and so they come out to protest.
So they're left-wing activists, in a way?
Yes, they're left-wing activists. And they come with, they put hoods on and sometimes masks and go running through the streets.
Was anyone hurt or anyone injured or anyone arrested?
Yes, there were 270 of the anarchists were arrested. There was a big police presence, and they went after them with sticks and arrested as many as they could find, I think. 11 policemen were injured in the whole thing.
Is this a common problem in Germany with these left-wing people, anti-nationalists?
Find them at almost any rally that Chancellor Kohl addresses these days, for example. It's typical on Unity Day to have a small left-wing fringe having protests. But it is localized. You only see it in a few cities, and it, of course, doesn't take over the whole ceremony at all. They were fairly far away from where the main ceremony was in Bremen. And in earlier ceremonies like this, they've gotten closer. A few years ago, President Richard von Weizsäcker got hit by eggs from these protesters.
Did they not want to see the unification of Germany?
They basically want to protest for protest's sake, I think. And they take this as an opportunity to go out and protest.
What's the atmosphere like this morning?
Well, it was calm overnight, and I suppose the protesters who went to Bremen to take part in their protests have since left. They've gone back to Berlin, Hamburg, Frankfurt, or wherever they came from. And now things will go on probably as normal until the next big rally that Kohl gives, and there will be more people there then.
Is there a chance of any clashes between these groups and neo-Nazis?
Not that much, because you don't really see organized groups of neo-Nazis appearing that much anymore. There were clashes like that a year or so ago, but now it's not very common at all.
The Reuters chief correspondent in Germany, Thomas Hennigan. This is LBC. 16 minutes past 8. Traffic in just a moment.
One, two, three, four.
In an independent test in October's What Mobile and Cell Phone magazine, Orange's coverage was judged to be the best in central London. The future's bright. The future's Orange. For more information on Orange, call 0800 168 168.
Ultra BMW cordially invites you to the used car event of the year. This weekend, Ultra have over 100 carefully selected high-specification used BMWs on display at very competitive prices. Ultra BMW are in Slough, just 10 minutes from Junction 5 off the M4. There will never be a finer opportunity than this weekend to buy a superb used BMW. Just dial 100 and ask for free phone BMW Ultra.
The LBC headlines, police in Northumbria fear a serial killer who's murdered three times may have struck again. There have been violent clashes in Bremen on the fourth anniversary of the reunification of Germany, and Major James Hewitt has been reportedly blackballed by his former cavalry officer colleagues over the book Princess in Love. On this program, the Daily Mirror's James Whittaker has said that the book will devastate Princess Diana and the royal family. Those are the headlines. The traffic news, no DHL London lookout this morning. Fred Hasko is here. He's always here, isn't he?
Does he not break his sword and tear off his epaulettes, does he?
Yes, at the very least, I would imagine.
Exactly, a cat of the bounders. Right, on the motorways, very busy at the moment, especially in the northeastern sector of the M25, from Junction 27, the M11, right the way through to Junction 25. I understand Junction 26, all the Mabbies at a virtual standstill. Southwestern sector of the M25, as you'd expect, coming around from Godstone all the way through to Junction 8 at Reigate, that's Junction 6 to 8. That's been a problem all morning. We thought there might be an accident down there. There was an earlier broken down vehicle, that's clear, but just seems to be weight of traffic. If you're on the M11 southbound through Junction 4, long tailbacks there. Blackwall Tunnel southern approach still very slow after a number of problems there, A, with the tidal flow, and B, a broken down vehicle. East India Dock Road, the A13, that's westbound, is very slow, as you'd expect at this time of the morning. We have in the heart of London at Whitehall, Parliament Square, a broken down crane that's causing tailbacks to Trafalgar Square, and one I haven't mentioned so far, of course, but do I need to, is the M4, the Heathrow Spur, and the perimeter road, and the approaches up from Junction 14 of the M25 up towards Hatton Cross and also Terminal 4. That's heavily congested. One small speck of good news for you. At Hospital Bridge Road, the A316, that accident has now been cleared. Underground and British Rail, no major problems. LBC Travel News.
Buy Kodak Gold films at participating mobile service stations and you can get 50% more film free. And we'll give you a pound off developing. For extra free photography, drive into Mobile.
This is a DHL Worldwide Express time check.
Exactly, 19 minutes past 8 on this 4th of October. A very good morning to you. London's weather forecast for you, a chilly start with some frost in the suburbs. A dry and sunny day today, remaining cold though, the top temperature at 11 degrees Celsius, that's 52 degrees Fahrenheit.
DHL Worldwide Express, for collections 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Win a home through the Evening Standard keyhole. Win a superb 3-bedroom house with garage, quality built by Barrett. Or win a luxury Barrett Thames side apartment with 2 bedrooms, fitted kitchen and carpeted throughout. Pick up a game card from your newsagent or Evening Standard office and place over the grid in the Evening Standard. Reveal 6 keys and win a home worth over £100,000, plus hundreds of cash prizes must be won. 2 homes and £50,000 cash must be won through the Evening Standard keyhole. Game cards available all this week, no purchase necessary.
The American occupation force in Haiti has started flexing its muscles, showing opponents of the deposed President Aristide that their time is over and they'd better get used to it. The U.S. demonstrated its strength by raiding half a dozen offices of FRAP. That's the main group that supported General Cedras and the other coup leaders. FRAP, a political party come military organization, is believed to be responsible for the estimated 3,000 deaths of supporters of Aristide in the 3 years since he was overthrown. Paul Woodley has this report.
2 days ago, the White House Chief of Staff, Leon Panetta, said that the United States is going to be a little more aggressive in ensuring that the paramilitary forces in Haiti are disarmed. First evidence of that came when tanks and armored vehicles full of U.S. troops descended on FRAP headquarters all around the country. The biggest raid was on the largest headquarters building in Port-au-Prince. It was there 4 days ago that gunmen shot at a pro-Aristide demonstration as it passed by, killing at least 5 people. During the raid, all those inside the building were arrested and all weapons seized. Hours earlier, the leaders of several other pro-military groups, known to be prone to violence, had been detained by the Americans. In all, about 100 people were arrested and dozens of guns taken away by the troops. The Deputy U.S. Defense Secretary John Deutsch explained why those raids were carried out.
It's part of a policy that we've laid out right from the beginning to get as many weapons as we can away from the paramilitary organizations in Haiti.
He called it a very successful day and said in the last 3 days, as many as 3,000 weapons had been seized and handed in to American forces in return for money as part of the so-called buyback program. But the Deputy Defense Secretary said there is still much to be done.
But remember, this is a land accustomed to violence. Weapons are everywhere in the country. People, many, many people walk around with shotguns and pistols. So this is a major undertaking, and we are beginning. It's a very successful beginning after 2 weeks, but this is a long job, and we are just beginning the process of disarming that violent country.
Who will do the disarming remains a matter of debate. The Americans have said they want the Haitian authorities to do it. But the problem there is many members of the Haitian police and army have been working with the paramilitary organizations, oppressing those sections of the community who supported President Aristide. The people who the American troops are supposed to work with by day in Haiti could be shooting at them by night. There is circumstantial evidence that the only U.S. soldier to be wounded so far by hostile fire was actually shot by a member of the Haitian military. The American, a member of the Green Beret Special Forces, was shot in the stomach at a military compound in the southwestern town of Lekay. He fired back, believes he may have hit his assailant, and the gunman was wearing and dropped at the scene a Haitian military helmet. All the Haitian police and army in that area have now been detained and locked up in their own jail while the search for the gunman continues. The soldier who was shot is now recovering in a U.S. military hospital in Port-au-Prince. Near the Port-au-Prince headquarters of FRAP, the Americans also detained about a dozen Haitian police officers in uniform. Reporters were told that was because the police had refused to surrender their weapons. But the more members of the Haitian police the U.S. troops arrest, the greater the chance that law and order will break down in the country. The U.S. commanders in Haiti have said that their men are not there to police the country, but they may have to until the international force organized by the United Nations is in place. That phase of the operation has started. 260 troops and police from various Caribbean countries arrived yesterday after several weeks of intensive training in Puerto Rico. They will be expected to keep order as the Americans pull out. and before a radically reorganized Haitian police force is trained and put back on the streets. The former police commissioner of New York, Raymond Kelly, has the task of creating that new police force. He says with the existing officers, he'll have to start from scratch.
They have not received any real formalized police training. So the goal is to ultimately start from a clean sheet of paper and construct a police force.
He will work initially with an international team of human rights monitors. They will interview all members of Haiti's police and military and decide which get to remain in uniform for retraining and which should face criminal charges for their actions in the last 3 years. There is an amnesty currently being debated in the Haitian parliament, but it's likely that will apply only to political crimes, that is, overthrowing the government of President Aristide, and actions such as beatings, rape, and murder used to intimidate Aristide's supporters would not be included in the terms of the amnesty.
Paul Woodley reporting for us from New York. It's now 25 minutes past 8.
From October the 5th, will you be listening in black and white or colour?
They're laughing and they're crying and they're drinking champagne.
I saw one of the very first armored vehicles.
The most exciting thing about working in a busy newsroom is the moment a story breaks, always having the very latest information and feeling part of events as they unfold. Now you can be just as well informed. I'm Jonathan Staples, and you can join me in the excitement of the news as it happens on London News 97.3 FM. I'll be with you from 10 each weekday morning.
London News 97.3 FM. All news, all the time.
There's more concern voiced today about new cuts in the police service in London and indeed around the country. The Labour Association of London authorities says 1,600 police jobs in the Met are at risk. The Police Superintendents Association meeting and conference in Warwickshire expresses similar views. And on the line is Chief Superintendent Brian McKenzie, National Vice President of the Association. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, put me right on this. I thought the government was trying to redistribute existing money to areas where the police need that money the most. They're not actually cutting back, are they?
Well, what's happening is, of course, chief constables are now getting their own budgets from April as a result of the Police and Magistrates Court Bill, that's just gone through Parliament. And obviously, for those forces to be given budgets, we need to establish exactly what force gets what money.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, what the government has done is sort of brought a formula in which looks at a whole range of topics such as unemployment, crime, length of motorway and all the rest of it. And of course the formula has produced some rather astonishing results, and the complaint certainly from the Association of Chief Police Officers, and we've got some concerns, is that some forces are drastically cut, which is going to make it very difficult, of course, for them to continue functioning as they are now.
Is this because the formula the government has selected is flawed or is too simplistic or what?
Well, we think it probably is flawed and it needs looking at again. And I think, to be fair, the government are going to look at it again. Forces can't take dramatic cuts of 17% in the budgets and function the same as they are now. And that's what's happening in some forces.
What about these figures I hear? 1,600 uniformed police officers would go in the Met, it's suggested. Half of the Met's dogs and horses would go.
Well, that's simply a reflection of what might happen if, in fact, those budgetary cuts were produced. And obviously what's happening is that the chief police officers are now saying, well, really, this isn't the way forward. We need to be more sensible in how we approach this. And we need to develop a more sensible formula.
Is the government listening to you?
Well, I hope so. Michael Howard's coming tomorrow, and he's speaking to conference. We're obviously in touch with the Home Office all the time. We've got Home Office officials here, so hopefully we can show the error of the ways, and perhaps they'll have a re-look at the whole question.
What do you suppose? I mean, if the government says no, that's what we've decided, that's how it's going to be worked out, and you find that you're all shorter of money than you'd hoped, can you get the local councils to bail you out in some way?
Well, authorities now, of course, will be freestanding authorities, and we're not connected with county councils as we were. Police authorities will be independent, and of course we've got Michael Howard's appointees on the police authorities, so it's going to be very difficult if the budgets that are set at the outset of this new process aren't the correct budgets, and so we're going to have to argue fairly forcibly that the thing needs looking at.
It is curious, isn't it, when the government keeps banging on about law and order, and everybody seems to think that we should have more policemen, that here we are talking about cutting the Met by 1,600.
Absolutely. That's the very point. point we're making. It's incredible, really, at the present time with crime being the way it is. So I think really that they've got to think about this formula. It doesn't really reflect the true worth of policing, and you simply can't apply a scientific formula, and expect it to produce sensible results. It certainly hasn't in this case.
Chief Superintendent Brian McKenzie, many thanks for being on the line with us this morning. It's 29 minutes past 8. We'll see what Michael Howard has to say to you tomorrow. In the meantime, we'll hear what Fred Heisker has to say in the absence of the DHL London lookout.
If you're on the M4 coming in from the M25, still very slow there, and especially the Heathrow spur, still rather slow going as well. Had a number of problems around the perimeter road this morning. They have improved slightly, but it's still rather slow there. On the M25 clockwise, approaching Junction 6, Godstone, still rather slow. Right the way through to Junction 8, just way to traffic. And the northeastern sector of the M25 around Junction 26, anti-clockwise. That, of course, is Waltham Abbey. That's rather slow, too. Park Lane, the gyratory system in Croydon, that's heavily congested. And in the heart of the West End and the city, Whitehall, junction to Parliament Square, a broken-down crane. Underground and British Rail, no major problems. LBC Travel News.
Driving around looking for the best printer deals? Why, when Lantec Direct have Hewlett-Packard printers at rock-bottom prices? Dial 100. Ask for free phone Lantec.
LBC News Talk 97.3 News.
It's 8:30. Authorities in Finland have ordered that the bow doors on all car ferries sailing between Helsinki and Stockholm must be welded shut. The move comes after underwater cameras revealed the bow door on the Estonia had been torn off. Other Scandinavian ferry companies have also followed suit. A 41-year-old man has died in a fire in South Glamorgan. Two others were rescued by firefighters from the house in Barry. They're suffering from burns and shock. Tony Blair is preparing his first leader's address to the party conference in Blackpool today. His keynote speech will outline his vision of Britain under Labour. The Princess of Wales makes her first public appearance today since allegations that she had an affair with Major James Hewitt. Princess Diana is said to be upset at the revelations carried in the book Princess in Love, which sold 75,000 copies on its first day of publication yesterday. That's it for now. Next update in half an hour.
Let's take a look at London's weather forecast, shall we? A chilly start, even some frost in the suburbs, the first of the season. It's going to be dry and sunny today, but staying cold. Top temperature 11 degrees Celsius, 52 Fahrenheit. This is LBC. It's 8:31.
From October the 5th, will you be listening in black and white or colour?
How far can you travel in 10 minutes? 20 miles, 10 miles, or a few yards? On London News 97.3 FM, you won't be far from the answer. Every 10 minutes we'll bring you the best travel news available. Not just the jams and train delays, the latest flight news, average speeds on the motorways, and all the news on tubes and buses. The complete travel picture. We'll get you there.
London News, 97.3 FM. All news, all the time.
The LBC Financial News. Shares have opened a little higher after yesterday's slump, with some of the braver traders bargain hunting after last night's 46-point drop for the FTSE. The market's also being helped by overnight steadiness for the Dow Jones and Wall Street. News in the city, there's been a little reaction, or rather little reaction, to a profits warning from the merchant bank Hambros. It comes as no surprise after a similar warning from SG Warburg yesterday. But with few companies reporting and no major names amongst them, despite some good results, there's little for the city to latch on to. So, gold is trading at $395.50 to an ounce. In the foreign exchanges, the pound against the mark is 2.45 marks. That's down a quarter of a pfennig. The pound against the dollar, up a quarter of a cent, at just over $1.58. The dollar against the mark is 1.55. That's down three quarters of a pfennig. And the opening FTSE 100 share index is up 6.1 at 2989.6. It's 8:33.
If you've got a business in Barnet, Potter's Bar, Cuffley, or anywhere else in North London, you've only got 2 days left to get your ad into the London North Yellow Pages. We close the book on October the 6th for a whole year. If you're in it, you get a whole year of extra customers, a whole year of extra business. Dial 100 now. and ask for free phone Yellow Pages. Yellow Pages. It does the business like nobody's business.
In my job, I know a thing or two about making money. I come into work in the morning, and by the time I leave in the evening, I've made several million. So, being in that line of business, I very much admire the abilities of Mercury Asset Management, Britain's leading investment house. They manage over £60 billion for clients of all shapes and sizes, from the biggest companies' pension funds to the small private investor. What I like best about Mercury is that they specialize. Making money for their clients is the only thing they do. And when you specialize in something, you're likely to get rather good at it. So, despite my own abilities, I trust Mercury with my own modest investments. Well, you know, you don't learn a lot about investment when you print banknotes for a living. For more information on Mercury Asset Management, contact your financial advisor or call Mercury now on 0800 445 522. That's 0800 445 522. Mercury Asset Management is a member of IMRO.
Six minutes before nine. This is the LBC Morning Report, the final morning report of all. It's the 4th of October, and a very good Tuesday morning to you from me, Richard Vaughan. The conflict between Iraq and the United States could be about to flare up again. Iraq is demanding an end to sanctions, and it's supported by many other countries. Even Iraq's old enemy, Iran, wants the sanctions lifted. Only Britain and America oppose. Well, on the line from Cyprus is our Middle East correspondent, Mike Theodoulou. Good morning to you, Mike.
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. What's the background to all this? Tell me.
The background is that Iraq insists it has complied fully with all UN weapons resolutions, and the special envoy in charge of monitoring Iraq, Rolf Akeas, says Iraq has gone a long way. Some countries already believe that Iraq should be rewarded for its compliance with the UN. Other countries, Britain, the United States, believe that the international community should hold out for more, that Saddam Hussein hasn't really changed in nature at all. So that is the background to it. The one last thing that the UN wants, of course, is to put in to action a long-term program to monitor Iraq's weapons of mass destruction to ensure that Saddam doesn't try to reacquire them. And that is due to come into effect fairly soon. But even then, the United States and Britain are saying that sanctions should be maintained until Iraq complies with other UN resolutions, including things like human rights, recognizing Kuwait, and so forth.
Well, that sounds reasonable, doesn't it?
Yes, it is reasonable in some ways. What the Rolf Akeas is saying is that once this test period begins, they should give Iraq some form of deadline to work towards, like 6 months. If after 6 months it's proved that Saddam hasn't reacquired weapons of mass destruction, he's complying with the UN, then it's about time to start easing sanctions. And there was a specific resolution talking about the oil embargo and relating it directly to the weapons issue. However, some other countries are saying that Iraq has to do a lot more. The position of the United States is to a degree understandable as well. Sanctions are really beginning to hurt Saddam at the moment. He recently cut food rations, put his troops on high alert to try and prevent any social unrest that could follow. And it seems now to the United States a real shame if sanctions are eased just as they're about to possibly to topple Saddam in some way.
Do you think that's the real hope of Britain and the United States, that Saddam Hussein will be toppled?
Well, that seems to be the hope, although that the tacit agenda, if you like, but that really hasn't worked after 4 years. And other countries are saying that the Iraqi people are suffering absolutely terribly, and there's no doubt there is awful privation there, malnutrition among children. The middle classes have been wiped out, whole people have been impoverished, school children are not at school, they're begging on the streets and so forth. But at the same time, Saddam, in a Stalin-like way, has managed to cling to power, becoming more ruthless by the week, the more that he feels that grip is under threat. Only recently he started ordering that ears of thieves are cut off, and that's also caused an awful lot of problems. So some people believe that he will go on clinging to power unless the sanctions are eased.
Why do you think Saddam Hussein will not walk the final mile?
as far as the UN resolutions are concerned?
Well, the way that the United States is now playing it makes it pretty impossible for him ever to fully comply with all the UN resolutions. Once on human rights, for instance, if he eases up on human rights, then his position will be under threat, so he simply can't do that. What he's saying at the moment is, for the last 2 years, Iraq has more or less complied with the UN weapons inspectors. He's saying if there's no reward, why on earth should Iraq go on complying? And many Iraqi officials are now talking about an impending showdown with the UN, in particular with the United States. They say they don't want it, but they're ready for it. Other Iraqi officials are hoping for some sort of policy change in the United States position, as we've seen a little bit on North Korea and to a certain degree on Cuba. They're hoping there'll be a policy change on Iraq. But Washington seems very adamant at the moment. In fact, only last week the CIA director was saying that Iraq has far from scrapped its weapons of mass destruction. They're in fact contradicting UN officials who say that Iraq has complied and saying that Iraq has still got chemical weapons, dozens of Scud missiles hidden away, and a whole biological warfare program, and is still trying to reacquire the components for a nuclear program.
Am I right in saying a new weapons inspection team has just arrived in Iraq?
That's right. The head of the UN team, Rolf Akaius, has arrived there for talks. He's due to report to the Security Council next Monday. And what Iraq wants him to do is to announce that the long-term program is about to start, and after 6 months, if Iraq has complied, the sanctions should be eased. Iraq is saying that it wants sanctions eased immediately that program begins, possibly